And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Monday, kicking off your work week, May the 8th, 2017. 17 minutes past the hour. Scott Spears along with you here on the Now program. Want to get a little bit of housekeeping out of the way here before we get to our very special guest today. Terry Tackett is in studio with me today. Sorry if I lose my voice or sound a little funny today. I'm a little under the weather. I'm not sure what I have, but something has creeped up here. So you may hear a cough from time to time or something like that. So we'll count on the guests to kind of lead the show here today, but we'll forge through. The show must go on. Something we want to mention, important, longtime Fahey Bank employee Bob Sanner, who's a friend of the station, a friend of a lot of people here in Marion, longtime peanut push king for WMRN, passed away unexpectedly on Friday at the age of 62. I had a chance over the weekend to talk to his wife, Vicky, just through messaging, and paid our condolences to Bob. And Bob was a great guy. If you met Bob, you liked Bob. And sad day for a lot of people at the Fahey Bank. I drove, had to go there this morning and do some business, and you can just tell there's a sadness in the air, but a sadness because such a great man has left us unexpectedly. So, Bob, wherever you are today, hope you're having a good time and rest well. Bob Sanner. And, of course, you can check the obituary report here on the station or the local newspaper. I'm sure will run his obituary visitation funeral plans if you want to pay tribute to him, and I'm sure that you do. So, that's our housekeeping for today. As I say, joined in studio by Terry Tackett. Terry, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, much better than me today.
Yeah.
I got this thing going
on. A flu bug or something going on.
I hope
there.
Not the flu. I don't want it to be the flu.
Right.
I don't feel, well, I feel kind of like, you know, like a car when you try to start it.
I got you.
I feel like, I'm not quite there yet today. But like I say, we go along because we've got a very special guest here in the studio. Mrs. Ohio, the current Mrs. Ohio, Terry Lynn Grothaus. Terry, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. Thank you for having me today.
Now, did I got the name right?
You did. It's Terry Grothaus.
See, because all morning, now Grothaus, Terry and I all morning were taking bets on how to pronounce this.
We butchered it,
and
of
thank
course.
Goodness you came early.
Yeah, correct
this
yeah.
Great German name.
Yes, yeah.
And I had to do it phonetically here,
yeah.
So I got
frequently
it right.
Frequently mispronounced.
Yeah,
but it means great house.
Great house in German.
Great house in German. Now, how far removed is your German heritage?
Oh my goodness, it's my husband's last name, so
well, right.
I
you're,
have
you're
no
not.
Idea.
Yeah, I guess to be Mrs. Ohio, I guess that wouldn't be you. See, this is how sick I am today. I don't know where I am.
You know what? No, on second thought, just let her talk. You,
I might go home. I might not be here for the end of the show. What is your maiden name?
So my maiden name is Jones, so it's
oh,
Irish.
That's not German at all.
Yeah. Irish, German, and Welsh, actually, is my background.
So how far removed is your husband, do you know?
I have no idea.
You've been married for 25 years. You
yes.
Cannot. When Terry walked in this morning, I said, I can't imagine you've been married for 25 years because you certainly don't look it.
Well, thank you very much. We have 5 children as well.
5?
Yes.
Ooh.
4 boys and a little girl.
Now, what's the best part of being a mom?
Oh my goodness. You know, when they're babies, all those snuggles are awesome. But as they get older, it's really neat to see how they're meeting their own goals and dreams, watching them grow into responsible, mature adults.
Now, Mrs. Ohio, I think most people hear about Miss Ohio. We hear about Teen Ohio now, Miss Teen Ohio. What goes into being Mrs. Ohio?
Well, you have to be married for at least 6 months. You have to be between the ages of 21 and 56 to be Mrs. Ohio International. So the marriage is the big part.
So what if you're over 56? What can you win something?
Sorry.
No. But we have many misses over 56 years of age.
I know, and they're all fabulous, but unfortunately they can't be in the pageant.
They can't be in the pageant. That is a shame. So what propelled you to enter this?
I actually, this is not my first pageant experience. I held the title of Mrs. Ohio America back in 2013. And my pageant journey kind of started with the dare of a next door neighbor who was in pageantry. She was in the teen division. And she said, you know, you should give this a try. And I said, oh, no, I'm too old. I'm too short. They don't have pageants for women. And she said, yeah, they do. They have pageants for misses. So I looked into it, entered, and that started my pageant journey. I stayed with it because of the women that I met. Just met incredible women who are active in their communities. Some of them have become my best friends and are my best friends still today.
What goes on backstage at these pageants?
Oh, it's a flurry of gowns flying, zippers zipping, changing into different outfits. There is the infamous butt glue that everybody hears about.
Now, what is butt glue?
It is either a roll-on or a spray that you use to tack down your bathing suit so your hiney's
really?
Not hanging out.
Did you know about this?
I didn't know anything about this.
No.
So you put glue on your keister.
Yes, pretty much.
But you can't do that yourself, can you?
You can spray it on. Sometimes it takes a few extra hands to get that bathing suit in the right place so nothing's hanging out that's not supposed to be.
Now, is this something you buy at Walmart?
You can buy it. There's a brand name called Stick'Em that they use. Actually, batters use it to spray it on their hands for a better grip on their baseball bat. Okay. And that is a product that I used. I'm not endorsing it.
No, I'm just thinking.
I'm familiar with that.
But you didn't know it was used.
But I didn't know it was used.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. You didn't know it was. You didn't know it was rear end glue.
No.
But it's interesting because I've been to the beach and most people, girls, women, look. Fine. I mean, what is the worry? What's going to happen if you don't stick this thing on?
You like to have the majority of your cheeks covered.
Oh, so...
You don't want the bathing suit riding up.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that happen? I mean, because I don't wear bathing suits. Does that happen when you're just normally
Absolutely.
Out?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's how oblivious I am to everything that's going on when I'm at the beach. I don't pay attention.
Yeah, I do.
So when you're in this, we talked about this before you came on the air, but how do you become Mrs. Ohio? What are the competitions?
Yeah, I was wondering, is there like any training involved? I don't know if that's the right word, but I mean, is there?
No prep per se, as far as mandated prep. You know, prep is on your own when you decide to enter the pageant. However, the areas of competition include interview, which is 50% of your score. That includes a panel interview with your judges. So 5 minutes with each judge that you spend with them, and also an onstage question that is scored. So that's 50% of your score. And then 25% of your score is evening gown and fitness wear.
Now tell me about the interview. How did yours go?
It was wonderful. We had an amazing panel of judges this year, so I got to spend 5 minutes with each of them. They asked me several questions regarding my platform, which I was able to share with them. And the onstage question was fairly easy as well. I had 30 seconds to share about my platform, and then they actually asked me a question about how I would promote the pageant.
How would you promote the pageant?
Well, you know, I do represent Refuge International as their international ambassador, which is a faith-based group that does medical missions in Guatemala. So representing Refuge, I am able to represent the pageant as well. And I'm always recruiting women for this pageant. It's a great system to get involved in. Not only does it promote marriage and family, but it also promotes community service.
Now, your platform is...
Vitamin G, giving the gift of growth to Guatemala. And the way that I got involved with that is that my daughter is actually adopted from Guatemala. We brought her home in 2006. And so that was a very special part of my life. And while I was there in Guatemala, I was able to see the needs of the Guatemalan people and how impoverished they are there. It really spurred my heart to come home. And we started sponsoring two children overseas, one in the Philippines and then one in Guatemala as well. But I still felt like there was so much work to do. And so once I finished my pediatric nurse practitioner, I went back to do medical mission trips there. While I was there, I discovered that 50% of Guatemalan children have short stature due to malnutrition and vitamin deficiencies. So I made it my personal goal to start collecting and donating vitamins to Refuge, and hence that's where Vitamin G came from.
Mm. Now, when you because you have four children that you gave birth to,
four
and then
boys.
One that's adopted.
Yes.
Now, do you feel any differently toward the adopted child?
Oh my gosh, absolutely not. She is as much a part of me physically and emotionally as all of my boys.
Now, how do you explain that?
to her.
Yeah.
She has known from the very earliest time that she's adopted. I have a scrapbook, actually, that has our journey through adoption. It's got pictures of her birth mother in it. So from the time that she was old enough to sit beside me and pay attention to that book, we started explaining to her where she's from. And it was really cute when she was younger. She used to go around and tell people, I'm from Guatemala.
So how important is it for you to let her know about her culture?
Oh, it's so important. I can't wait to take her back to Guatemala. We've never been able to take her. It's kind of my goal to take her back at age 13 so she understands a little bit more and appreciates more what she the opportunities that she has here in the United States.
It's fascinating because adoption seemed to be big for a few years, and then it kind of went by the wayside. For people out there who may be thinking about this, who can't have kids on their own, what would you say to them about the process and how it all happens?
I think there's a fear among people that they won't be able to love an adopted child the way that they love their own biological child. Or if they don't have a child of their own, they're afraid that they won't be able to love an adopted child, a child that's not a part of them. And all I can say is that God places that baby in your life for a reason, and the minute you hold them in your arms, it's just love at first sight.
It just this. Did you have the same feeling you had when the doctor placed the children, your children you had in your arms?
Absolutely. I remember like yesterday, the day we got our referral from Guatemala. So basically what that was, I was at work and I got a call that said, we're sending you pictures of a baby girl who needs a home. You have 24 to 48 hours to decide if this is the baby you want. And immediately when I saw her picture, before even having her placed in my arms, I knew that she was my daughter. I knew she was the one for me. And then the moment they put her in my arms for the first time, she was 4 months old. I went to Guatemala to visit. I just knew. I could not wait to bring her home.
Raising boys versus raising girls.
Totally different.
Totally different. In 2017, what's it like to raise, let's start with a boy.
So my boys are essentially raised. My youngest son is a senior in high school this year. My other ones are in college. So while there's still some worries there, you know, they're pretty much into adulthood. I think the biggest difference between raising boys and girls today is just the fear factor there. You have to take things so much seriously in terms of social media. You know, my daughter's in fourth grade. She's asked questions like, can I have Instagram? Can I have Facebook? And I have just said, absolutely not. We're not doing that. You know, there's the fear there of predators who are posing as young men, you know, and reaching out to her. There's also the fear of just letting her go places by herself that I didn't have with the boys. I felt more protected with the boys, I guess. And with her, there's just a little bit more trepidation there having her out there on her own.
How do you raise a child in the age of cell phones and Facebook and all that?
I think it's really important, and this is coming not just from me as a mother, my own rules, but also as a pediatric nurse practitioner. It's definitely very important to set limits on electronics. A study just came out recently and said that, you know, these electronics, exposing your child age two or under to things like iPads and cell phones has been linked to speech delays. So I think it's important to set those limits, you know, no more than an hour of electronics every day.
Do you think, I guess the fight in people's mind is that if you don't let the child become in depth with these objects early, that they're going to be behind because now the world uses them. This is how we all communicate. This is how we all function. Is there any worry about that?
I think they're getting enough of that at school. You know, all day long, our lessons are on computers. We're also using iPads and those things at school. And just about every child has a smartphone now. So it's just making sure that there's boundaries there.
And where would you say the boundaries go?
I'm definitely a huge proponent in limiting the amount of social media that these kids have access to. I think with all of the bullying, that is a huge push. You know, these kids are never able to get away from it. They get picked on at school, they come home, they're being attacked by text messages, by Facebook, by Snapchat. Limiting that social media can help cut down on some of that.
Why do you think people do that? Why do you think that? Because you and I would imagine, Terry, when we were growing up, Facebook was not there. So we were not going to be bullied on Facebook. What is Facebook bullying to you?
I think going Facebook bullying entails going on and posting rude or obnoxious or hurtful things about someone else. And unfortunately, once it's out there, you can't take it back. And I think people do it because they're able to. You can hide behind a computer screen. It's a lot easier to type something like that and send it out into the world than it is to say that to someone's face.
Do you think people believe it?
I think kids believe it, unfortunately. And that's when the rumors and the gossip start, and then people lose friendships.
Do you think this is going to get worse or better?
I believe it's going to get worse. I think there's a lot of people out there promoting the anti-bullying platform in the hopes that it will change, but we're getting more and more social media platforms, and so I think that kids are going to be exposed to it on an even greater basis.
How do we get away from it? You say it's going to get worse, but we want it to be better, so how do we make it better?
I don't know that we can really get away from it, but I think it's important as parents to sit our kids down and talk about what bullying looks like and make sure that they have a trust in you to come to you if something like that happens to them, or go to a teacher or administration. I also think it's important that we teach our kids that it's not appropriate to do these to other children their age.
It is, what emotional toll do you think it takes on the child?
Well, we have a higher than ever adolescent suicide rate these days. So, I think that's the biggest toll, is that these kids are being body shamed, whether they're too heavy or too skinny or they don't look a certain way. And like I said, they're never able to escape that. So, you know, they feel like their only escape is to take their own life. And that is a very, very sad fact.
I've said this time and again, our YMCA, our fitness clubs here in town are busy, busy, busy. Now, I will drive through there sometimes, and I'll see people drive out smoking, drinking. I'll see them in the bar on Saturday night. So in my mind, I'm thinking, they are not doing this for health reasons. They are doing this for looks reasons, appearance reasons, I guess is what I should say. Why is that so? Do you think it's more important now than when we were kids?
To
look a certain way.
I don't know. I remember being young and feeling like I didn't fit in or feeling like I needed to look and act a certain way. So I don't think that it has increased or that it has changed. I think the media is really bad about pushing a certain agenda. You know, women are supposed to look a certain way. I think that there is some body shaming for young women in that, you know, they think they're all supposed to be, you know, a size 0 and 6'12", and that's just not the reality of it. So the media has presented some of that, but I don't think that it's any more prevalent today, just maybe more noticeable today. We're more aware of it.
Like when I, Terry, maybe I'm wrong here, but when I was growing up, I don't remember people saying, I've got to go to the gym. How many times do you go to the gym a week? This seems like a very big question now. How many times nobody was asking that when I was in high school.
Same here, yeah. I mean
this has been
now you see people taking photos of themselves at the gym, and you know. And,
oh my God, we got to see these photos of people at the gym.
They're on the elliptical, or they're on the. Is it like reinforcement that they have to let you know that they're at the gym? I mean,
I think so.
Now here's the thing. Now, I do not think anybody should be body shamed, but if you're going to the gym and posting pictures of yourself at the gym, kind of half naked. I mean, you're at the gym half naked, and you're putting that out there, and you don't know who's all on your friends list. Yeah. Aren't you opening yourself up here for some trouble?
I think you probably are opening yourself up, but I think the reason a lot of people post pictures like that, whether they're at the gym or at the grocery store in a certain cute outfit and they're posting selfies, is the need for validation.
Where did that come from? When did we become so needy?
When social media, I mean, is this a whole a social media thing, or was it?
I think a lot of it is social media. I'm not sure where the need for validation comes from. You know, that's inside of each one of us. And it's that lack of ability to see our own validity outside of the way that we look sometimes.
So you have to have somebody else tell you that you look good to believe it.
I think there is a lot of that.
How do we get past that? If we could get past that, we would be good.
For children, I think part of it comes at home. You know, we need to start praising our kids, not necessarily for how they look, but for their accomplishments, for their intelligence, for picking up their room or putting that bag back in the trash can, you know, choosing those moments where we reassure them that they are enough just the way that they are.
Now, 25% of the competition is fitness, correct? Mm-hmm. Now, what goes into that?
Well, I will tell you that it's a little bit different than most pageant systems. The international pageant system actually asks you to wear aerobic wear. So it is like a sports bra and a pair of shorts or a long kind of tankini top, which is kind of nice, you know, especially when you're a mom and there's some stretch marks here and there. You get to cover that up with some shorts rather than a little bikini bottom. But, you know, you're judged on your physical fitness. That doesn't mean that you have to be skinny as a rail, and that's not what they're looking for. They're looking for a healthy body type. Are you exercising? Are you living a healthy lifestyle? You know, how do you look in that aerobic outfit? You know, they want you to promote a healthy body.
Could somebody who is overweight enter this pageant?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And I think people should enter the pageant, even if they're overweight. We need to learn self-love. And you know what? Entering a pageant is a great way to set a goal. And, you know, maybe you enter and you set the goal that you're going to compete by next June. You've got a whole year to work on your physical fitness. And part of the reason why I love pageantry so much is just that goal setting and working towards that.
Now, that part of the pageant, well, let me say this. Which is your favorite part of the pageant? Which is your least favorite part?
I would say that interview is my favorite part. I like to talk, as you can tell. I've also, I loved sharing my platform with the judges, talking about what I love to do with Guatemala and my medical mission work. So that's definitely my favorite part. My second favorite part would be the evening gown competition. Just to get dressed up in a pretty dress, you don't get to do that every day. Get out there and model that and see everybody else's beautiful gowns. That's phenomenal.
And what's your least favorite part?
I don't know that I have a least favorite part. Maybe the onstage question is always a little nerve-wracking when you don't know what's coming your way.
Is the judging? How do you like the judging part? I mean, is that kind of a nervous? I don't know what.
Yeah, there's a nervous energy to it. You know, it's part of it though. Like, you know, you're being judged. So all areas of competition. But I would say definitely the onstage question is probably the most nerve-wracking because you don't know what they're going to ask you. So you just have to kind of be prepared on the fly.
When you get the crown, are there things you cannot do and can do? Are there rules?
There are certain rules. You know, we sign a contract once we're crowned. Common sense things, you know, you don't drink alcohol while you're in your crown and your sash. You don't pose nude. You don't do any of those things that would call your moral character into question. It's pretty simple.
So, I mean, have there been transgressions of this in the past?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Really?
There have been women who've been stripped of their crown in not just the Mrs. system, but in the Miss systems as well, you know, for things like that.
Really? Now, is this just like if you are out at a party? If somebody would snap a photo of you drinking something alcoholic, that would be it?
I don't know that they would strip you of your crown at that point, but it's definitely frowned upon. I mean, the rule is you do not drink alcohol while you're in your crown and sash. If you want to take it off and you want to have a drink, that's fine. It's just no photographs, no drinking while you're in the crown and sash. And I think that it is appropriate. I mean, you are representing a system. The international system is a faith-based system. So you have to think about what you're promoting and how you're making yourself look.
Now, in what ways is it faith-based?
The pageant director are born-again Christians. Mary Richardson, who is the pageant director, is a Christian, and that's the way that she runs her pageant. It's a pageant run on integrity and the highest moral standards, and that's one thing that really drew me to this pageant and attracted me to it.
Now, is that part of the entry process that you have to be a born-again Christian?
No, it's absolutely not. It's not a requirement at all, but she makes it very clear that she is a woman of faith, and I respect and admire that.
Are you a woman of faith?
I am.
What allows you to have that faith? Because so many people don't have it.
You know, I believe in my relationship with Jesus Christ, and people can argue with me and say that God doesn't exist, but he can be seen everywhere. And there's always the question of, was this science or was it creation? And I'm not here to argue with anyone about that. You know, I believe that we're each entitled to our beliefs, I believe that God exists. I believe that Jesus was born for us, that he died for our sins, and that he rose again. That's my belief, and I respect anyone who doesn't believe that.
When did that come to you?
About fifth grade. I was raised in the church, and around fifth grade is when I gave my heart to Christ. And, you know, I went through periods of my life where I kind of turned away. I had a rebellious teenage years. But then I came back around about the time that I got married. So,
what allows, because it's a tough life sometimes. It's
yeah,
a tough life.
Yeah.
Where somebody dies, tragedy happens, we all have it happen. What allows you to keep it in those moments? How do you hold the bad with the good?
I think it's really hard, but I think we have to remember that he works all things for good. And so there is a purpose under heaven for everything that happens in our lives, even though we may not understand it now. At some point, we all will understand it.
Do you think that, because there's a big debate now, there's always been a debate, should we teach evolution and creationism? Should we teach one and not the other? What's your feeling?
Well, my personal opinion is that there's really only one. There's creationism. So I'm very much for that. But, you know, that's not everyone's belief. So I think it is important to teach both. People have the right to their own beliefs and feelings about how we all came to be in this world.
Do you think that, do you understand why people have doubts?
Oh, I absolutely. Yes, I absolutely do. You know, it's hard to believe in something that you do not see.
Yeah, I think that's it for a lot of people.
It is. But, you know, we don't see air that's entering our lungs, but yet it's still there. That breath, we take it in, we blow it out, and we don't even think about it. It's just part of who we are. We do it all day long, but we don't see it. It's the same kind of concept.
You know, a lot of this, I think, is based in what happens when we die. Mm-hmm. And we did a show on this last November, and it's an interesting question. What do you think happens when we die?
I believe that we go to heaven, and we meet with Christ, and we are judged at that point. And then we either get to enter the gates of heaven and live eternally, or we're condemned to hell. That's my belief.
What is heaven? Is it like, is it here? I mean, do I see people that I know? Will I recognize them? How does it work?
According to the Bible, we won't always recognize in our human form the people that have passed on, and we will all be brothers and sisters in Christ. So, you know what? I don't know how that works.
And what is hell?
Oh, boy. I don't know, and I don't ever want to find out.
Right. Well, it's an interesting thing, because I think those are the two big questions that we all have in life. Mm-hmm. Does it exist? Where is it? What is it like? And I think those are the questions that have been plaguing people for hundreds of years.
Yeah. And I think that's why you just have to have that blind faith in your beliefs.
And if the blind faith is why do you think it angers some people? Because some people get angry about it.
Mm-hmm. They do, unfortunately. You know, I guess some Christians get angry, too, when they are talking about their beliefs. And that's unfortunate. But I think people get angry because they just don't know. They don't know, and they don't want to believe. They don't want to believe in something they can't see. They want that hard scientific evidence of what exists and what doesn't.
Would somebody, in your opinion, who is a good person, does good things, but just is a non-believer because of that whole idea that we can't see it, we can't touch it, do they end up in heaven?
I believe the only way you go to heaven is through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
So that could end up being bad for them.
It could.
It's a fascinating subject. When you look at life as a whole, what's a typical day like?
A typical day for me. Well, I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner, so I work full time outside the home. I work 4 days a week. So a typical day for me is getting up at 4 or 4:30 a.m. to work out in the morning. I then go to work all day, come home. As soon as I hit the door, wash my hands, make some supper for the family. Some nights include rushing my daughter off to softball practice or attending a track meet. And then I may have a little half hour to an hour in the evening to kind of unwind before I go to bed. Go to sleep, get up, start the next day all over again. It's busy.
Now, what is your job like?
Oh my gosh, I love my job. I work for a pediatric practice in Lima. It's Pediatrics of Lima. We have 4 physicians there and 2 nurse practitioners, including myself. Very large pediatric practice. So I see children ages birth to about 21 years. On a given day, I usually see about 20 patients or more. And I absolutely love what I do. Those visits are well child visits, so just your general checkups, but also sick visits as well.
Is it hard to see sick children?
I don't think that it's hard. I guess I'm kind of used to it. I'm used to the fact they don't feel good. The hardest thing is the parents sometimes, you know, just comforting them, being able to be there for them and reassuring them that, you know, this is a virus, it'll run its course. Because, you know, parents, they feel horrible when their child's sick. They want to fix it. And you can't always do it right at that right point in time. So just giving them the reassurance and making them feel comfortable with taking their child home is sometimes the most difficult thing.
Now, you talked about going to the gym. On a daily basis, what is your gym routine like?
I usually run for about a half an hour, sometimes longer. I also lift weights. But recently, since I've been preparing for the Mrs. International pageant that's coming up in August, I've been doing more of a kind of ballet bar body weight type workout in addition to running.
Now, what does running do for you?
I think it relieves my stress more than anything. I mean, of course, it burns calories. I don't know that it changes my body that much, but it's definitely a stress reliever. And getting up first thing in the morning and doing it, I absolutely love. While I'm on the treadmill for that half hour, I can listen to a podcast. I can listen to music. Nobody's bothering me at home. It's my half hour to spend by myself. And it's a great way to get my day started. I have so much more energy throughout the day once I get that workout in.
Why do you think people find it hard to get put that into their schedule?
Oh my gosh, we're so busy nowadays, and I think a lot of us are overscheduled. You know, not only do we have work and family demands, but we're running kids here and there, and so it is really hard to find the time to work out. And I think that that's a big problem for a lot of people. You definitely have to schedule it. You have to make it a priority. My favorite saying is, you know, you make time for things that are important to you. Working out is important to me, and it's not just about the way that I look, it's about the way that I feel. It helps with my mental health. It definitely helps with my energy level, and I want to be healthy for my kids and my grandkids.
Terry, you've talked about recently diagnosed with diabetes in the last year. Mm-hmm. You talked at one point about going to the gym, but it's hard to fit in the time.
It is. Move my microphone.
Yeah, move your mic. Yeah. I want to hear you.
Yeah, it is. You know, but what I've actually done is I've taken the time now to where I've just really incorporated walking more into my mm-hmm. into my schedule. You know, if I don't have time to necessarily go to the gym, I think walking's a big
definitely a I big mean if you think about if you're not used to doing any physical activity and you incorporate 30 minutes of walking into your day, I mean, think about those extra calories you're burning. You know, you can lose weight and get in shape just by doing a little bit of something, taking the stairs, parking farther out in the parking lot, you know, just making little efforts.
You know, I this body image thing is fascinating to me, because I do think that's where the majority of the bullying comes from, is about how people look. Where did this come from? I mean, I know in the past there was this idea that people maybe who weren't good looking, whatever that is, were picked upon. But boy, today you're right. Suicide rates are higher. Why is that?
I just think, as I said before, that it's more prevalent. You know, before, like when you're at school and people are telling you you're overweight or that you're ugly, you know, at the end of the day, like you felt horrible, but you went home and you got away from it. There was an escape. You went home to your parents, you had your evening, did your homework, you get up the next day and start all over. But now it chases you home. It's text messages, it's Snapchat, it's Facebook, it's just in your face all the time. There's no escape from it. And so I think that our teens are thinking the only way out they have is just to end their lives.
Yeah, but do you think, boy, why so drastic though? I mean, why not tell the parents? Why not tell the school? Why not, as silly as it sounds, fight back? Anything's better than ending your life.
I think most of the times when they get to that point that they have been down those avenues where it has been addressed and it's just not getting any better. And the kids who are the perpetrators are flying under the radar. And so they're still, you know, these poor kids are being victimized and they do feel like there's no escape. There's also a higher prevalence of depression and anxiety among our adolescents nowadays. And I do think some of that comes from social media too, and all the pressures that they have upon them to succeed.
Well, what is the tie-in to social media? pressures for college, pressure to succeed, pressure to look good.
I think the looking good, definitely.
So it all does come back to body image here. So how do you, if you can't stop the bullies, how do you fix the other end of it? I mean, some people just don't have the money. Some people don't have the resources. Some people don't have the metabolism. What can you do?
I think it's teaching people to love themselves for who they are. You know, this is the person that God made you. You are each fearfully and wonderfully made in His image. This is who you are. This is what God's given you. And, you know, even in my pediatric practice, I'll have young girls that they come in and they say, you know, I hate the way I look, or I hate my weight. And I will talk to them about ways that they can help themselves. You know, maybe they're not eating correctly. Maybe they're not exercising. And we can talk through some of that. But in the end, I always make sure to tell them that you are beautiful the way you are. This is how God made you, and you need to love yourself.
Now, does that go both ways? Does that go for the person who is exercising as well? Does that go to, maybe I don't need to do this because I'm beautiful the way I am?
Absolutely. You know, even if you are physically fit and you look good, most of us have other insecurities. You know, whether it's there are girls that are being bullied at school because they look good. And that's a problem. You know, it goes both ways.
Well, you know, the sad thing is when I look at these suicides, and maybe it's just the ones that are publicized, but a lot of times it's the homecoming queen. I'm always shocked by this because you think, well, the homecoming queen should... You think, you know, people like this person. Where is it because all the attention's on them? How do you coalesce that?
I think I understand that girl a little bit. When I was younger and I was in high school, I was a cheerleader. I hung out with the popular girls. From the outside looking in, you would think that I was very confident. I projected myself that way. But on the inside, I had some social anxiety. I had low self-esteem, and I was a perfectionist. So I put a lot of pressure on myself to be the best, be the best, be the best. And I think that that's what happens in those girls that you're talking about, like the homecoming queens, that seemingly have everything. You know, they're a straight A student, they're popular, they're the homecoming queen. Inside, they're putting a lot of pressure on themselves to be perfect or to succeed. And I think that that's where that comes from.
If you are insecure, why not project that? What is the fear there?
Makes you weak and vulnerable.
To who? To who, though?
To your peers. Yeah, definitely to your
peers.
And
the fear that they will do what?
Reject you.
Because you're weak.
Yes. Because you're not that confident person that you've projected yourself to be.
But don't you think sometimes that also makes you endearing?
Perhaps. You know, when we're older, I think sometimes it does. I mean, looking back now, maybe I would have done things differently. But when I think about how I was treated in school, I don't know that it would have made a difference. I think it could have made things worse. If they knew that what they said and what they did bothered me, if I didn't act like I was confident, then I think it could have made it worse.
What did they say? What were they saying?
Well, all the girls thought that I was going to steal their boyfriends. They were not very nice to me. This is just horrible, but this is bullying. I've had my car completely coated in Vaseline and baby powder.
Wow.
I've come back from a basketball game and had a dead cat on my car.
A dead cat.
Someone killed a cat and put it on my car. Yes. Came out to my house and written nasty words in the snow about me. Those were the things that happened to me when I was a senior in high school. So, I mean, there was definitely bullying going on back then. But
this was girls?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They did this because they thought you were going to steal their boyfriend.
They did not like me. They did not like me because I was a cheerleader and I was popular. And
were you nice
I was hated.
To them?
I was nice to them.
And it didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
So there's really nothing you can do.
No. And so I understand those girls that feel trapped. And I think sometimes that when you are a girl that's attractive or you're thin, you are scrutinized just as heavily as that girl that's overweight.
I think, gee whiz, did they have to kill the cat? I mean, what?
I don't know where that cat came from.
That is insane that somebody would put a dead cat on somebody's
kids
car.
Kids can be so very cruel.
Now, see, I didn't have an experience. I mean, I was not, doing the things you were doing, but I did not have that experience in high school.
You're lucky.
Yeah, I don't know. Terry, did you have an experience like that?
No.
I mean, I don't know. That's awful. That is just awful. Vaseline and baby powder
and the whole thing.
Yep. My goodness gracious. So, and really, there's no way to stop it. That's what we learned from this.
Yeah,
you can't stop it.
No, you cannot stop it. But what you can do is teach your children that they have to be strong. They have to love themselves.
Did your parents instill that in you?
I had a kind of a difficult childhood. My parents divorced when I was 12, and my dad was kind of MIA, so I didn't see him a lot. My mom raised me. She had to work a lot, so she was home very little. I think it was hard for her. A lot of who I am today, I attribute to my relationship with Jesus, but also I attribute it to my husband, the women that have surrounded me, pageant ladies, ironically, and also my in-laws.
What did your husband do for you? Been married 25 years.
Yes. So my husband is the first person in my life who has shown me complete unconditional love.
Your parents do. We know the father was MIA, but yeah. What about your mother?
Yeah, my mom, she's had some emotional issues, and so I think, it was hard for her. It was really hard for her.
Are you in a better place now with her?
Absolutely, yes.
Do you think now she's unconditional?
It's kind of a hard question. I mean, there's still a lot of stuff there. I mean, she still has some emotional things, and I don't know that I've ever actually felt that unconditional love from her.
What is unconditional love versus love?
I believe unconditional love is what a mother should have for her child. It's the love that Jesus has for us, that love that no matter what you do, no matter how many mistakes you make, they're not going to turn their back on you. They're not going to leave.
What did your husband do that was different than all these other people in your life that showed you that?
When I was 17 and met him, I would say I was probably an emotional baggage case, just basically because, my parents were divorced. I had a lot of baggage from that. I was very insecure. And, I was very clingy, so that could have drove somebody away. He really helped me find my place in the world, helped me find my confidence, and kept reminding me of my inner beauty.
How do you do it?
Just loved me. I don't know. He just loved me and stuck by me. He's probably the first person in my life that's never left. He's never abandoned me. He just stood by me no matter how horrible I was.
You were horrible to him and he stayed.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say that I was horrible to him. I probably wasn't the best wife that I could be.
And now?
Oh, I think I'm a great wife.
if you had to rate it in the start, 1 to 10, where would you put it?
Oh, in the beginning, I'd say maybe a 3 or 4.
And now?
I would say probably an 8 or 9.
Really?
Yeah.
Where's the improvement needed to be a 10?
I think there's always things that you can do to improve just in your kindness level or the amount of time you spend with someone. There's always room for improvement. I'll never give myself a 10. There's always something you can be better at.
Terry Lynn Grothouse is the guest. Mrs. Ohio, we are going to take about a 10-minute break here, come back, talk some more with her. Talk about the pageant, talk about the relationship, talk about the kids, talk about the stuff we haven't gotten into yet, talk about the world as a whole. We have a whole another 45 minutes coming up right around this bend. Stay with us here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM Radio, streaming live all over the world, WWGH1071.com. Be back in 10 minutes. You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio.